am Lindsay Kemp. I'm the Artistic Director of Baroque at the Edge, and I'm delighted to be welcoming you to the second of this year's festival podcasts. Today we're going to hear five of our festival artists talking informally about the relationships they have with their instruments. But before they begin, I thought I should let you know that John Dipper, the folk fiddler who tells us here why he's taken to using that very Baroque instrument, the viola d'amore, has had to withdraw from his concert with La Nuova Musica because of COVID restrictions. His place in that concert is going to be taken by fiddler Tom Moore. That's who you can hear playing in the background right now. But we decided to keep John in this podcast because, well, because he has really interesting things to say. And also because some of you may remember hearing him play the viola d'amore for us at Baroque at the Edge in 2019. So he's still a festival artist, really. Anyway, enough of that. Just sit back now and enjoy.
Hello, I'm Robin Bigwood and I play the synthesizer in Art of Moog. The instrument that I've got here today is actually not a Moog. It's a synth by the American firm Sequential. It's one that I'm going to be playing a lot in the concert. And it's physically quite a small thing. It's got a 3-octave keyboard, a control panel that tilts up towards me. It's covered with dozens of knobs and switches and flashing lights. And this is what we would call an analog synth, meaning that it's got circuitry in it, which generates sound from undulating voltages. There are some synths out there which are really more computers, and they emulate the old electronic circuits, but this one is the real deal. And like lots of synths of this type, it's what we would call a subtractive instrument, meaning that its starting point for sounds tend to be these really bright, buzzy, frankly, quite annoying timbres, something like this. And the idea is that we make those more interesting and more palatable and more musical by subtracting something from them, namely harmonics. And we do that with what's called a filter. So on this synth, it's actually the sort of largest knob, the largest control that's facing me is a filter control. And if I turn that as I play a note, you'll hear exactly what happens. So on the one hand, it gets quieter, but in fact, it's getting quieter because it's losing its high harmonics. On a synthesizer like this, the interest comes from the way sounds change over time. One obvious way is to apply a kind of wobble to the pitch of the tone. If it were a classical instrument, we'd call that vibrato. In fact, some synthesizers do. It's done with what's called a low-frequency oscillator. It sounds like this. And I've got control over the speed of the wobble and also the depth of it. It gets to be a bit ludicrous, that. And it's not only pitch that I can have those low-frequency oscillators controlling. It could just as easily be the brightness. So rather now than pitch, we've got a wobble in brightness. I can make all sorts of shapes of sound. So something like this, which eases in a bit more slowly and eases out again afterwards. And essentially, by putting lots of these things together, I get a sound which has a lot more articulation, a lot more life in it. It loses that sort of boring quality of the static tone generator. And in fact, I don't have just the one of these tone generators, these audible oscillators. On this synthesizer, I've got three. And if I turn them up so you can hear them, that's just one. Here's another one. So you may hear that kind of phasing sound. I can make that go a little bit more out of tune. And start to get some more thickness and some real beating going on. And add a third. I can also offset these oscillators at octave amounts. So now I've got them effectively in a 3-octave stack. And I'm just playing one key to get that effect. I could even adjust them so that they are not in octaves, but form by themselves a chord, something like this. The last thing I'm going to show you is this lovely device, which I'm pretty much addicted to, called the arpeggiator. And the idea is here that by holding chord shapes, the synthesizer will arpeggiate the notes that I'm holding. So I'm just turning it on. Here we are. And I'll return those oscillators to being pretty much more in tune, in unison. And with the arpeggiator, I can choose different ranges, a wider range, different shapes. And often with these sounds, the icing on the cake is some kind of effect applied to the output of the synthesizer. So I've got options like a reverberation. Makes it sound like it's in a much bigger acoustic space. And then something like delay, which is an echo effect.
My name is John Dipper and I play the viola d'amore. For a long while I've been playing the fiddle or the violin, whichever you prefer to call it, and I was looking at doing some storytelling accompaniment, and I was finding that as I was using my fiddle it was just really not good enough. It wasn't giving me enough options. So I happened to see in a local auction house there was a viola d'amore. It was quite a beaten up one, but I took a chance on it, and it's got a very, very small violin body, which I now realise is a bit of an issue. But I thought, because it has 7 strings for the melody and another 7 strings that are sympathetic, I thought, well, what would be really interesting would be to string it so that a violin has 4 strings. I'll have every other string as a melody string, and the ones in between as drone strings, so I can get drones all over the place. Because one of the things I was finding when I was accompanying stories was it was really useful to do drones, but with a violin you've only kind of got the notes on the string above or the string below, and that's it. You can't go anywhere. So I thought, yeah, I could have drones everywhere. So when the instrument arrived, I strung it up how I thought it should go, and within about 20 seconds realised that that was the most stupid idea ever, because if you were to play any melody of any speed, any string crossing then caused you to cross or have to leap 2 strings at every point. So I ummed and ahed about it, and I looked back and sort of harked back to the point where I'd been thinking about buying a nickel harper, and the instrument that came before the nickel harper was a Mora harper, which had 3 strings. And I remember having a go on one and thinking, oh, I'd like one of these as well. But basically, the middle string is a drone string that the bow pivots on at every point. So I sort of applied that thought and came up with a tuning system that I've been using for the last few years for the instrument. And so I don't tune it like a regular viola d'amore. So this is my first viola d'amore. So its low note is C, like a viola. Then you've got a tone up D. Then G, like the bottom of a violin. Then a tone up A. then the D of a violin, the third string of a violin, then the open A, and then finally the E of a violin. So from the bottom. Like that. Now, it can cause massive confusion if you are on the lower strings and you accidentally get one string out because you'll be a tone away from where you thought you were, which can be very annoying and frustrating too. But the reason I did this was that I can get scales around a common drone note. So if I have D, then I can have and I can also have the same on an A as well, so. So you can get really nice thirds in places that you could never do on a violin and all sorts of other things. But basically it gives me 9 notes around a drone string. And so I used that on the first album I recorded with it, which was with a guy called Dave Malkin, who plays fantastic guitar. And I could hear when we were recording it that the body of the instrument just wasn't big enough. So the instrument I'm playing at the moment is the first one I had. And I would say it's arguably slightly thinner than a violin, and it's got a sort of more of a double bass viol shape at the shoulders of the instrument. So where the neck joins the body, it's not looking like a violin there that's rounded. It's far more sort of droopy, I guess you could say. And so I talked to a lot of people, including the trusted violin shop in Bristol, the Bristol Violin Shop, and he suggested a maker called Jonathan Hill. And so I approached him and we got talking about it, and over various emails and things we agreed to have a meeting, and I went and tried one of his instruments. And eventually, after lots of waiting, he made me a new viola. Now, this instrument has probably at least twice the depth of the original instrument, and I hope that you can hear that. So this is the top end or the middle end of it. So. So that's the low C. And also you can hear that on this instrument, the sympathetic strings work a lot better. But you can actually go lower than that at the moment. I've got it strung so that you've got C.
Hello, my name's Elizabeth Kenny. I play the lute. In this Baroque at the Edge programme, actually I'm playing two members of the lute family, which won't look like lutes and possibly will sound a little bit, but not entirely like the kind of Shakespeare Christmas card lute you might have heard. Because we're playing some Baroque music, but also some music from the 20th century by Latin American composers like Silvio Rodriguez. And sometimes I get to use kind of harmonics, things that I don't do normally, which I'm enjoying. If you see this instrument maybe on the website or in pictures, you might notice that it's got two necks. I've got one load of strings on the first neck, which go up and down, and that's because it was quite hard to get sheep to give their gut to stretch long enough when they wanted this rather bass register. So they just put a couple of strings down the octave, and that would eventually give us some quite nice chord clusters and some dissonances, but also some unisons, which gives you a different flavour to a normal instrument that goes from bottom to top. And the second neck is where these bass notes reside. And so everything rings on in a way that they were hoping would give you the idea of the harmony of the spheres. Because when the instrument first appeared, it was used to accompany the voice in these extravagant multimedia entertainments, the precursors of opera. And they were particularly said to go very well with a tenor voice, which is very lucky, because we have our very own tenor, Nicholas Mulroy, in this programme. And so that mixture of tenor range and bass instrument was what they really liked, and it seemed to echo what you might get if you were sitting on a cloud singing of the harmony of the earth and creation. But more down to earth, it also is related to the guitar and was, in a theatrical context, incredibly useful because you can make jokes about it when people go off stage and they're looking for a violin but they come back with one of these. And the other thing you could do with it, which is quite new at the time, was you could do kind of funky slurring and things that the lute players hadn't always been able to do. So dramatic kind of effects. And then you could do the chordy stuff, the three chord trick. And you could go on like that all day if you had a particular set of dancers or a show that wanted a kind of indefinite length of music.
Hi, I'm Eliza and I'm 16 years old and I play the recorder. Like many people, I started the recorder in primary school at the age of 8. However, unlike many people, I decided to continue. Why did I choose the recorder? Well, at the time it was because I found that I was quite good at it, but also because it opened my eyes up to music and I discovered a passion for it. I think there are so many special things about the recorder, and I just want to show people that it's not just an instrument that you play at primary school. Its versatility, unique sound, and the recorder family is so vast with the many sizes of recorders and types within the sizes. So, for example, you've got the Renaissance, the Baroque, you've got the Modern, and even the electric recorder, which has recently been developed. I'm going to play for you the first piece I ever played on the recorder, called Little Fly. Now, obviously, when I played that when I was 8 years old, it probably sounded a lot different to how it does now. So I'm now going to move on to the Sopranino recorder, which is the size smaller than the descant. Personally, I prefer to play fast, virtuosic music on this recorder. So I'm going to move on to the treble recorder, which is a size lower than the descant recorder. Personally, this is my favourite recorder to play, as I think that it can play all sorts of music.
Hi, I'm Toro Atingi Mashclair, and I'm a orchestral and solo percussionist who's going to be playing at the Baroque at the Edge Youth Showcase. Now I'm just going to focus in on two of the instruments that I'll be playing in the Youth Showcase, which is the marimba and the vibraphone. What I'll probably be playing the most of is the marimba, which is definitely one of the main solo instruments in percussion. So this instrument comes from Honduras and is actually also the national instrument of Guatemala, although it actually comes from a descendant of a West African balafon. It's got a beautiful mellow sound, beautiful bassy tones, and a huge range, which actually makes it quite monstrous to carry around, especially up and down my staircase. Playing the marimba has affected and been affected by my appreciation of contemporary music. Obviously in percussion there's not a ton of old repertoire. Tchaikovsky didn't write for marimba very much. So in terms of repertoire, there's been quite a lot of need for innovation and pushing forward, and so we get a lot of commissions from composers and also have to do a lot of arranging ourselves. So basically there's a lot of creative process going on when creating repertoire for marimba. Just to show you one of the arrangements that can be made from full marimba, and also to highlight its indeed beautiful mellow tone, I'm going to play an excerpt from Sibelius's The Spruce, which is part of a series of 5 short piano pieces, all based on Finnish trees. Now, the other instrument I'll be playing at the Baroque at the Edge Showcase is the vibraphone. It's used a lot in jazz. There's been many famous jazz legends like Lionel Hampton and Gary Burton who have not just left the vibraphone in the context of the big band, but also brought it out of the forefront as a solo instrument. A good deal of what my Spotify consists of is affiliated styles of jazz, so like funk and soul, and also I've got a lot of jazz vinyls at home, including my favourite Crystal Silence by Chick Corea and Gary Burton. It lends itself to other styles very, very well. And actually, at Baroque at the Edge, I'll be improvising a little, but also mostly using the vibraphone on the Sonata in C Minor by Delsignor Detri. It's quite a strange piece, actually. It doesn't sound that Baroque. The harmony is quite out there for a Baroque piece, and so I thought it would be appropriate to pick an instrument where I could manipulate chord the easiest. And so now, just to give you a little taste of the vibraphone, I'm going to play a little excerpt from Waltz for Debbie by Bill Evans. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you can look out for these instruments on the Baroque at the Edge stream from the 7th to the 10th of January. See you all then.
Thanks for tuning in to the Baroque at the Edge podcast. To see these artists in action at this year's online festival, and for more information, please visit our website, baroqueattheedge.co.uk.